Vishnupa, Paramahansa, Theravadacharya, Sitaris, Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, please. This time, BBC Founder, Acharya's Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, please die. Grantharav Srimad Bhagavatam, he die. Gora Premanandi, he all glories, all glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Happy Thanksgiving. It will definitely be happy here. Actually, I was leaving, but then I found out the Blind Uncle Band was playing today. So I decided to stay, and right after they finished their set, hit the road. So today is Thanksgiving. And I'll just say a couple of words. You can say giving thanks, thanksgiving. It's akin to gratitude. And gratitude is the current of bhakti, the currency of bhakti. So the question is, how can we understand the plan of the Lord? Unless the Lord reveals, we can't understand. So if that confidential relationship exists with the Lord or his devotees, then one can receive the mercy that is available through the process of bhakti, because the process comes through a person. So ultimately, Bhakti Devi is an expansion of the internal potency of the Lord, and the bearer of that potency is a person. And to get that mercy, we need to be at the feet of that person who is giving us bhakti. That is Krishna's system. So in order to open our hearts to what the process of bhakti can offer us, we have to open our hearts to the persons who are delivering bhakti. But there are unwanted things in the heart, called anarthas. And they're very embarrassing. But how to remove these anarthas? So there's a wonderful purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam where there's an explanation given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur from the prayers of the personified Vedas. And he said, when you are at the feet of that qualified person who is delivering the message of the Vedas, try making a very sincere effort to try to understand from various angles of vision what is that is being given to us. What is it? This is a wonderful gift. So by that very effort, gratitude awakens within the heart. And through the agency of gratitude, Krishna then gives us the ability to understand what that gift is. And then, as we understand that gift is bhakti. Bhakti awakens. So it's not a mechanical vending machine. The currency is not the coin. The currency is our gratitude. And gratitude is the message itself. And to the persons who are kindly delivering that valuable message, Krishna gives that intelligence when someone is constantly striving to serve him in a pleasing way. So what pleases Krishna is when he sees that those who are dear to him are being particularly appreciated, respected, honored, and the gift that they are offering is being greatly valued by us. One time Srila Prabhupada commented that only an animal is not grateful. This is a very monumental chapter, actually. I mentioned the other day when I was sort of gave that impromptu class on Tuesday, mentioning how Srila Prabhupada had written this first volume of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He brought it with him in his cases from India. The first volume in three parts. And he told us that everything he has to teach us is in these books, referring, that was in July of 67. So these books were the three books, the first canto of the Bhagavatam. And we can only imagine the value. We can only imagine the value of the Bhagavatam class. These Prabhupada set up the program that Bhagavatam class would be every morning, giving impetus for us to absorb in the beginning of the day Srimad Bhagavatam. So, again, I mentioned the other day that considering that he wrote these purports prior to his arrival in America, it's really astounding because you're reading these purports and it's like right here and now. Pick up any newspaper. Oh, it's right here and now. He's talking about what's going on, how it's going on, why it's going on. So some of the things that come through in this chapter that in the age of Kali, the sutra class of men are always in the post of administrators. And the cows and the bulls, the mothers and fathers, they're unprotected by these Vaishnavas and are subjected to the slaughterhouses organized by sutra administrators. Just not a good deal. There's one very powerful, prominent politician in West Bengal, and it's a lady. She's only like 5 feet tall. Her name is Mamata. And she comes to our prophet there in Mayapur. But she doesn't come as a pious person. She comes to get, you know, pious Sukriti. She's, unlike other women in politics, actually, she's not being framed as someone's wife or mother, a daughter or a partner. She's like a standalone powerhouse. And even though she comes to our project, and she's given substantial help. Like when we had the different laws that were preventing us from, you know, getting the TOBP up and going and different projects that we wanted to do and we were being prevented by the rule of the land, she intervened on our behalf and swept things aside. So very powerful, and she's very friendly to ISKCON. But she's an avowed slaughterhouse advocate, as well as vehemently advocating cow slaughter. So the present person who's, what is he, prime minister, whatever it is, he's like putting bans on slaughterhouse, and she's adamantly going in his face. We will not follow this. We're not going to do that. We're going to, you know. And she actually asked Ambarish, can you build a factory here? He wanted him to build a car factory. So, yeah, here we have this person who is very powerfully situated, shows favor to us, but, you know, not at all a dharmic in her mindset. So another symptom of the age of Kali is the principles of religion are attacked by the uncultured sutra population of Kali. And for want of sufficient education and culture of Vedic wisdom, the sutra-like population defies the principles of the religion, just like Mamata. We're not going to stop slaughtering cows. Yeah. And it terrifies, you know, it terrifies persons who are religiously oriented. And then the next symptom of Kali Yuga is the distressed condition of the cow. The cow's milk is required for sacrificial fire and for performing sacrifices. And in fact, Prabhupada mentions that this householders follow this prescription, they can actually be happy. But wholesale cow slaughter is responsible for all the troubles in the present society. So he's saying that back in the 60s, all the troubles in present society, meaning at that time, due to wholesale cow slaughter. And here we are, the next century over, 2021, and the same statement stands as true, it rings as clear as a bell. And he said, you know, that a real society, it should be based on the happiness of cows and bulls. But how can a cow or bull be happy when they know? When I was in stationed in Holland in the 70s, mid-70s, they had a traveling Saint Vitan party, ladies. And we each had our specialties. And I was, at the time we were going down into Belgium also, so between Belgium and Holland. So I got this idea, because the only book we had in Dutch was the first Hare Krishna cookbook. All our other books were in English. So I started going to slaughterhouses with these Hare Krishna cookbooks. And because they didn't speak much English, I learned how to say, "Tak for de vrouw," means take it for your wife. And I saw such, like, incredibly painful situations in these dreadful places. And these cows were crying tears as they were being forced and prodded up the ramp to their death. They knew it, and they didn't want to go. But they were, you know, given electric shocks, beaten, pushed, you know, really dreadful. How can the cows be happy? So how, if the cows are not happy, how can our society be happy? So the elected show bottle executive heads, they're representing a very degraded public. And Prabhupada commented, it cannot be, these kind of people, they cannot be equal with a strong king like Maharaj Pariksit. That the dress and the style of royal order does not count. It's one's actions that are counted. And I was thinking always, you know, when I first heard about the Kali, the, you know, like dressed like a royal king, I was thinking about our situation back then, you know, the hippies, how hippies would dress up like different famous personalities, as if dressing up like that personality would, you know, bring them to a higher level of whatever. And the poor hippies, they were unwitting representatives of Kali, dressing in costumes of royalty, or Jesus was a very famous one, you know, there were a lot of Jesus Christ hippies, and other personalities, but, you know, degraded behavior. At the same time, it was these same hippies that came forward to hear and assist Srila Prabhupada. So we should never, you know, dismiss that the mercy that Prabhupada has brought can actually be distributed to anyone and everyone. And therefore, just like this program this weekend, going out in the Harinam, like Nithya was mentioning, are such great acts of benevolent charity to society at large. You know, administrators under whose nose these wretched behaviors are happening, although they're supposed to be representatives of God, it's only a name. And these powerful administrators, they're just the rulers of the poor citizens by their dress. And Prabhupada said, factually, they are worthless. And they're like lower class men without cultural assets of the twice born. I mentioned this the other day, how we're seeing how these uncultured rulers, and then we have our wonderful so-called democratic society, and you get this kid who just killed two people, wounded another one, and he gets to walk free, not charged with anything. He had a big assault rifle, you know, you didn't have it legally, but let him go, you know? And then another kid, the president, the former president, no names being said, but a former president, he called the same kid a nice young man. A nice young man who just killed two people and wounded another. So this is the degraded situation we're in. So for a pious king, the culprit who kills an animal, said in this chapter, who kills an animal in a secluded place is punishable by the death penalty. Exactly like a murderer who kills an innocent child in a secluded place. But now that murderer will just walk away, you know. And then, but you mentioned, you know, killing in a secluded place. So while Mamata, that politician I mentioned, was railing against, you know, we're going to continue, we won't stop killing the cows and eating meat, Some other students in another state had a public demonstration protesting the government ban on cow slaughter. And to show their determination, they brought an innocent calf in the public, and in the public they slaughtered this poor calf. And they were applauded by the ignorant fools. So the protection of the lives of both humans and animals is the first and foremost duty of a government. And all life should be protected. You know, all living beings have a right to live, even the trees and the plants. And this is the basic principles of an Aryan civilization. I read once in Bhagavatam 5 reasons for cutting a tree. I can only remember 3, and if anybody can remember the other 2, I'd really like to be reminded. But housing, agriculture, and fuel, these are permissible. And it's said that an Aryan, or a devotee, doesn't kill even a small plant unnecessarily, what to speak of cutting trees for sense gratification. So this is from one of the purports in the 7th canto. So any tree, then Prabhupada, he said, any tree that produces nice fruit for maintenance should not be cut down. It's a Vedic injunction. So, and it's the duty of the government to kill at once. You imagine how popular this would be. Statement would be, I'm just quoting Prabhupada here, would be nowadays, kill at once all bad social elements such as these dacoits, and I thought it was interesting you used the word dacoit, because at that point in time we wouldn't even have known what it was, and it wouldn't even have been in our dictionary, so these dacoits and murderers. And the same punishment is due to animal killers, because the animals of the state are also praja, meaning one who's taken birth in the state. And this includes both men and animals. And any living being who takes birth in a state has the primary right, probably to emphasize the primary right to live under the protection of the king. So Maharaj Prithat was such a king, so pious, and he was ruling and governing through the according to scriptural codes, where the modern politician is just going by his personal belief, his mental, you know, sentiments, or whatever will get him the most vote. He doesn't even particularly care as long as he gets that vote. So any man of the material world is in a conditioned soul. Anyone in this material world, we're conditioned souls, and we're bound by the hands and feet by ropes of material nature. And still the conditioned soul foolishly thinks, oh, we're free to act according to our whimsical sentiments. Yes, we are. We can do whatever we like, but the consequence will be there. That knowledge is not understood. And Prabhupada mentioned that the kings or the executive heads of state must know the codes of Lord Krishna. And then he said the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, they're teaching. This is what they're teaching. And we must act accordingly in order to fulfill the mission of human life, which is to put an end to all the miseries of material conditions. So it's the prime duty of the king, or the executive head, to give protection in all respects to the peaceful, offenseless citizens of state. And the devotees of the Lord, by nature, are peaceful and offenseless. So therefore, the prime duty of the state is to arrange to convert everyone to become a devotee of the Lord. In other words, to assist the Krishna consciousness movement. Then Prabhupada was mentioning, actually the executive must be determined to punish the strongest offenders. And it should be a principle that the state executive head offers the acts by the codes of the Lord to the offender, that he treats an offender according to the codes of God. So in the scriptures, there's also a mention of a padharma, or occupational duty of extraordinary happenings. And this is very interesting. It is said that sometimes the great stage, Vishwamitra, had to live on the flesh of dogs in some extraordinarily dangerous position, that in a case of emergency, one may be allowed to live on the flesh of animals of all descriptions. But, caution, it doesn't mean there should be regular slaughterhouses to feed animal eaters. So, I wasn't personally familiar with the incident, or maybe I'd forgotten it, so I just took a quick look. And it was quite interesting, this incident with Yudhisthira and Bhima. Maybe some of you are her scripturally, deeply scripturally inclined. This was from Mahabharata, know this. So, Yudhisthira was asking Bhishma, when the high righteousness suffers decay and is transgressed by everything, in other words, dharmic behavior is being bypassed. So then unrighteousness becomes righteousness. Righteousness assumes the form of its reverse. Everything is topsy-turvy. And when all restraints disappear and all truths and respects of righteousness are disturbed and confounded, and when people are oppressed by kings and robbers, when men of all the modes, four modes of life become stupefied in respect to their duties, and all lose their merit, when men see the cause of fear in every direction as a consequence of lust, covetousness, desiring other people, I see what you have and I want it, and then you try to get it. You lose your mind, really, lose your intelligence. And then what do you see? When such a condition exists and everywhere you look, it's fearful. And life becomes very chaotic. And there's no trust between one another. And then, there's like, slay one another by deceitful means, deceive one another in mutual dealings. And it mentioned when houses are burning down throughout the country. We were seeing this stuff today. When was the Mahabharata written? Like, how many yugas ago? And then when the Brahmanas become exceedingly afflicted, when the clouds stop to pour rain, when everyone's hand is turned against your neighbor, even your own family members, when all the necessities of life fall under the power of robbers, then it's such a season of distress. It's a terrible distress that's in. So Yudhisthira was asking, how should a Brahmana maintain himself at such a time? And also, how should a king live at such a time when sinfulness overtakes the world? So then he was questioning Grandfather Bhishma. So Bhishma tells this really fascinating story about Vishwamuni. There had been like a 12-year extreme drought, and it brought about famine and a really ghastly situation. And, I was reading, we don't have time to really go through all the details, but it was like when you read it in the 12th canto and all the descriptions of Kali Yuga are there. This was like advanced stages of Kali. So then Vishwamitra, he was starving because all the rivers dried up, all the lakes and the rivers, the ponds, the reservoir, there was no water. And without water, there was no growth for vegetables or trees. Everything was desolate. And he was searching and searching for food, and he was really hungry. So he went into this little hamlet of Chandalas and looking for food. And he happened to see in one of the, such a wretched atmosphere, I wouldn't even want to say it, in the temple, it was ghastly. So he was looking in one of the little huts, and he saw the haunch of a dog. And the haunch of any animal, but to speak of a dog, is considered impure, the most impure, in fact, the impure of the impure. So he was just so hungry, in his mind, he just thought, when this person goes to sleep, he's going to sneak into his little hut, and he's going to take that haunch, and he's going to eat it. So he went in, and the person, it was described that the person appeared like he was asleep, and it actually had phlegm in the eyes. But as soon as Vishwamitra started to remove, he woke up. And then there was this incredible conversation between the two. Vishwamit was justifying himself. And this, you know, Chandala was coming back with very good arguments based on various shastra, why he shouldn't do what he was doing. And Vishwamit was saying, you know, you can do anything to preserve your life. And I am so weak, I'm not going to be able to carry on. So went back and forth like this. And in the end, Vishwamit took this hunch, and he went into the woods where his wife was waiting for him. And he resolved that having first gratified the deities according to due rites, so in other words, he didn't just start like getting into it. As a pious person, he first gratified the deities according to due rites, and then he cut this hunch up into different pieces to offer to the different, you know, ancestors and other pitri and according to proper custom. And then he ignited a fire according to Brahminical rites. And after that, then he began to cook the meat into that fire. And then he performed ceremonies in honor of the gods and the pitris by dividing the object into many portions as necessary, according to scriptural injunction, and by invoking the gods with Indra as their head to accept for sharing the meal. So Indra, he got, you know, honored, and he suddenly started pouring copious amounts of rain, reviving, kind of revitalization. So Vishwamit, having committed the rites in honor of the gods and the picture, you know, he ate the meat. And, you know, this seems like just such a contradictory situation. And it's that afterwards, his sins were burned, and after a longer time, he acquired the most wonderful ascetic success. In other words, even though he had broken dharma by his activities, because he performed his sinful activity in a, you can say, brahminical shastric manner, and then he didn't continue doing that, it was an emergency situation, his life was considered successful. So then it's understood that when the end in view is the preservation of one's life itself, a household person who is possessed of learning and acquainted with the means should rescue himself when fallen into distress by all means within his power. So that's what had happened there. And by having recourse to such understanding, one should always preserve one's life. So, I remember one time Upendra, who was a personal servant for many years of Srila Prabhupada, this was like 67, and he had, many of us had the same thing, we had to finish up some situations due to our previous life before becoming a devotee, and quite often that meant having to go to jail or prison. Like myself and Shamsundra, we had to go to prison. So Upendra was facing jail, and Prabhupada was very concerned for him, and he told him, you know, eat meat if you have to, but you must survive. You know? So that, you know, ultimately he didn't have to, but Prabhupada, and then in one other instance I know of, he told this devotee the same thing. The devotee was a courageous preacher in a situation where his life would be threatened if he was discovered, and, you know, vegetarian food items were not in abundance in that place, and Prabhupada just told him, doesn't matter, eat meat if you have to, but continue to preach. So extraordinary situations require sometimes extraordinary solutions. So according to the Padma Purana, our present trouble in society, all that we're experiencing personally and outside of our lives. Of course, even what's going on outside of our lives, it affects us. It comes, you know, we're affected. We're all part of this, you can say, part of the cosmic manifest creation, part of the material creation. So our trouble is due to the fructifying of seedling sins. In other words, there are some little seeds within ourselves that at a particular time, they may fructify. But even those seedling sins can gradually fade away by the execution of pure devotional service. And I think many of us have experienced that. So even if a devotee is a mischief monger, it's just astounding statement that don't accuse them for the suffering inflicted. You know, that even you know this person is responsible, you shouldn't see it this way. So that's kind of an extraordinary instruction to wrap your head around, you know, that even you know somebody's guilty, you know, supposed to. But it's explained that such mischief mongers are made to act by some indirect cause, and therefore they tolerate the sufferings, you know, tolerate, thinking, well, this is God given in small doses, otherwise the sufferings would be far greater. So. So, then further, Prabhupada was giving again some good instructions how man cannot check all the evils that are going on simply by statutory acts, further laws, further policies, you know, police vigilance. So the disease of the mind can only be cured, because all this is coming as a result of a polluted mind, a diseased mind, can only be cured by the proper medicine, mainly advocating the principles of the Brahminical culture, are the principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. And in the modern civilization and economic development, it's the false economic development is creating poverty and scarcity. And Prabhupada used a very nice way of describing the result is blackmailing the consumer's commodities. So like right now, even we are having issues about, what do they call it, the supply, you know, that there's so much disruption that the goods, including food that are required and not required, but it's not getting distributed, it's held up, you know. And this is, you know, the result of this unfortunate mentality. So the teachings of the Bhagavatam principles will afford men the opportunity of austerity, cleanliness, both inside and outside, allowing mercy to the suffering, truthfulness in daily behavior. But this is what will happen if we live our life according to Dharma, according to the principles of the Bhagavatam. And then the qualities of a devotee will begin to manifest. And Prabhupada, you know, mentions that people under the godless civilization, they can't have good qualities, no matter how well they may be materially equipped. We see down the road in Florida, there's a very rich former president with his fancy mansion, you know, but no good qualities. You know. So the resultant action of human civilization in the age of Kali is dissatisfaction, anxiety, stress, depression. You know. So the Bhagavatam, probably the Bhagavatam religion, it urges following the principles of religion. And the principles of religion are not some kind of dogma or regulative principles of a certain faith. Such regulative principles may be different in terms of time and place concerned. Again, right now in America we have, you know, we're kind of unlucky with our elected heads. The current elected head, he's a Catholic, and Catholic has some, you know, some good points. They protect life, they protect unborn children in the womb. In other words, they don't support abortion. So this president, he's been a Catholic, but he supports the right to kill an unborn child. And therefore, some of the Catholic priests, they won't offer him Holy Communion. They consider him unfit. And actually, they're right. You know, they're standing correctly. The sacrifice means to accept the primacy of the Lord and therefore perform acts by which the Lord may be satisfied in all respects. And the basic principles of religion, this truthfulness and the ultimate goal of religion is to satisfy the Lord. And in the age of Kali, the greatest common formula of sacrifice is the Sankirtan Yajna. And that may be performed anywhere and everywhere, in order to drive away the personality of Kali and save humanity from the grievous influence of Kali. So therefore, tomorrow here in Alaska, our 24-hour kirtan will commence. And we don't need a 24-hour kirtan to chant, but it definitely presents an opportunity for individual and collective purification. So I'm very fortunate this will be happening here. I'm just finished with the past few days, past 5 days, there was a celebration being held a bit down, about an hour and a half, 2 hours, depending on the traffic down the road in Groveland, Florida. So there's one retreat center that was purchased by a devotee. And Russian devotees rented the center, and they were observing a celebration. Not Russian devotees from just here, they came from Canada, West Coast, East Coast, you know. They did this in celebration of Srila Prabhupada's arrival in Moscow, in Russia, and 50 years ago, this year. He actually arrived in June, but now they're having the celebration. And certain devotees who had been there at the time were giving some examples of the extraordinary things that happened. I mean, some of the extraordinary things were just terrible. But even though they were being tortured, harmed, killed, women also, it wasn't just the men who were getting it, they were so fixed in their Krishna consciousness, even in the prisons, that they would loudly get others to chant Hare Krishna. They took the opportunity to get their cellmates chanting Hare Krishna. So there's actually no restriction on the holy name, and any opportunity should be taken to chant Hare Krishna. So we have the example of Haridas Thakur when he was imprisoned. He was getting everyone to chant. And when myself and Chamsuna went to prison, he said, you know, at least you can chant Hare Krishna, you know. So we will be chanting Hare Krishna. I won't be here, but all of you will be here chanting Hare Krishna in a wonderful way. And in doing so, I think it will be very pleasing to Srila Prabhupada and very pleasing to Lord Chaitanya, and very pleasing to all of the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna. Yeah, she's asked me the verse, and I didn't have time to. I had this from some old notes, and I didn't have time to look up the. Yeah, I can look that up, but it's in the prayers. They're asking me which verse that I mentioned in the beginning that helps us remove anarthas from our heart. So it's in the prayers of the personified Vedas. This is a great way to get. You know, you can read the personified Vedas, and you'll catch that verse. It was pointed out by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura.
That's on page 10, Canto 87.
You know it, huh?
You, 10, Canto 87, chapter.
So then, Nandini Kishore is mentioning, because I was trying to, does anybody know the five reasons where you could kill a tree, and I mentioned the three that I could remember: homes, agriculture, fuel, and she could, maybe the fourth is medicine. It could be. I just can't remember. Kali Yuga memory. I've had it all my life. It's not that I'm old. It's I'm forgetting. I've been this way my entire life. And somebody's asked me where I'm staying. One person said food. That could be too. Yeah. Because he points out, like Prabhupada pointed out, that the tree that's giving fruits cannot be cut. So giving food is another, you know, there's many unlimited wonderful trees that give bounty in the form of food. And definitely those should not be cut. though. So, I mean, actually, I've given classes on trees, all from Prabhupada's purports and personal experiences with Prabhupada, how he was very protective of trees. So, at one point in Juhu, when we were like preparing ways, we had to make a road, and there was a tree where the road was supposed to go. And Prabhupada found out they planned to cut it down. And with great haste, he went there and he stopped them. And the Prabhupada, he goes, you go around the tree. I was like, what was the problem? Just go around the tree. He knew how many trees were on that Juhu land. And he really, and what he said one time, the reason he favored this project, Juhu project, with so much was because of the abundance of trees. And you know, he knew how many trees. He was so observant. And one time we were on Braj Prigamara with Srila Prabhupada, and we went to this place, and had, we were in this temple, and had many, many, many pillars. And suddenly he goes, how many pillars are there? And nobody knew. And he goes, see, you're just sitting here, you don't even know, you know. But he knew, he already knew. And then there was a tree that was, and it's still standing there, that was on the public road, and they were going to remove it in order to facilitate traffic. And Prabhupada personally went to the proper magistrates to protest that tree being killed. And that tree is still standing today, and you just have to go around it. And in Jaipur, there's many instances, you know, where the tree's in the road, you just have to go around it, and there'll be some little temple there. You know, it's not a small thing to kill a tree, you know.
I heard
one story that...
No, you can do it.
The devotees suggested Prabhupada in a morning walk that Prabhupada, there's a big warehouse called Home Depot. They have a chainsaw. And we can cut down those big trees because Prabhupada expressed that the impersonalists, through their meditation, ultimately they want to merge, but they don't know that they become, take the body of a tree. So the devotees suggested that we can just liberate them by cutting down. Prabhupada said, no, that's not how you liberate. You have to transform their consciousness. So you have to wait for them to take another birth as a human being, and then. Also, another pastime I heard that where one devotee was saying they wanted to put a bomb, Pushkaru was saying, in a slaughterhouse. And Prabhupada immediately stopped. He said, no, this is not how we preach.
Yes.
We have to transform.
Yeah. There's two examples I can give in that regard. One may not seem like it's an example, but it is. Because otherwise, what are you going to do? Like, you can't go to every slaughterhouse and get every animal. You know, a lot of times, persons, you know, from a Hindu background, so they're pious, and they'll go to a slaughterhouse and get a couple of animals or more, and then bring them to the temple. Like, suddenly, here's this, you know, they don't, you know, they think that's it. Well, who's going to care for the cow? If people are going to donate a cow, then they have to donate the resources to maintain the cow, feeding it, medical, etc. You know, just handing a cow over is not a pious activity. It's, you know, you have to be responsible. You know, so one time it happened that this one in early on, a lot of people can come in different distress conditions, and you know, sometimes young women, they were impregnated, but they weren't married, and they didn't have, you know, the person, like when they found out the girl was pregnant, disappeared. So this one girl was came in, it was in New York. And so it became known. And so one person said, well, a male person, well, I could marry her, you know. And Prabhupada said, are you going to marry every woman? Like, this is so common in Asia, Pali, you're going to marry every woman. But on the flip side, a young girl came to New York, San Francisco. She was pregnant. And she actually got initiated. But Prabhupada all the young men together, there were five of them at that point, and he goes, this poor girl, she has come, and she is pregnant. And the baby doesn't have a father. She doesn't have a husband, so the baby doesn't have a father. He says, well, one of you please marry her. Because the baby has to have a father. She needs protection. So one of the boys did. So, you know, two sides. But, you know, we're, this idea of going and grabbing a cow from the slaughterhouse, it never helped weight. We held weight. You know, Prabhupada never recommended that. So.
Story where he didn't stop them. They blew themselves up.
Can you hear me?
I said two guys in New Zealand in 73, there were two Christian followers. They blew themselves up trying to create a bomb.
Your voice is dropping. Two guys.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe they don't want to hear me. But two guys blew themselves up. They killed themselves. They were trying to create a bomb to blow the slaughterhouse. In New Zealand in 73, these were two Krishna followers because they got the idea that this is the best thing to do, blow up the slaughterhouse. They didn't know what they were doing. Luckily, there was no one around some warehouse. They blew themselves to smithereens. Then Prabhupada commented after the fact and said how silly it is because they'll just start a new slaughterhouse anyway.
Yeah.
They could change their mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The best thing is not bombs, it's to power the holy name.
I have a personal question. On one side, Mamata Banerjee, I remember it was a big challenge to acquire the land for TOPP and Prabhupada's way he wanted. So she did a big favor, there's no question. She did a big favor. I also saw her garlanding Prabhupada and glorify Prabhupada. So I respect that on one side. But on the other side, she promotes this slaughterhouse. What attitude you would maintain if you see her personally? What attitude you will have towards her?
I've seen her personally a few times. You know.
But what did you maintain, your inner attitude?
You know, she is who she is. She's a confused condition, Kali Yuga administrator. So the little bit of good she's doing, thank God, because really, she's helped us tremendously, but we shouldn't think she's some kind of saint. She's not. But somehow, you know, some Sukriti. You know. One time when she came, you know, oh my God, it was such a fanfare. She came in a helicopter, and they cleared an area. And this was just within the last 3 or 4 years. Where she comes down, her helicopter, and all her entourage in the cars, they come ahead, and they were there. And she came in to to the temple, but specifically she went to Panchatattva and offered an arti. Some devotees were just like aghast, you know. But I mean, we do these puja talis, you call them puja talis. I don't know if you do it here, but it's pretty popular. And I mean, New Vrindavan is a big deal. So people make some donation and they go in front of the deities and wave a tali around, you know, with the incense.
Huh?
Did she do official arati?
But I'm saying she's performing this, you know, honorable activity. And I think that was the time she asked Ambarish to build a factory. So she's, I kind of call it like, you know, it's kind of like spiritual schizophrenia. Yes, yeah. So, I mean, somehow or other, there's that side of her, but Kali Yuga, very, very, you know, mental whiplash. Like one time I was in Jaipur, and Mangal Arati, this was quite recently actually, and so you know how if you've been to Jaipur, Radha Govind Temple, you're just like squished and packed, and this was pre-COVID, I don't know what they do now. But I'm squished up in there, kind of in the front, and I looked right next to me was this really, you know, beautiful young lady, and she had her little baby. And then, you know, when the curtains open up and there's Radha Govinda, and there's just so much, you know, adoration coming from the audience, but you know, from the devotees there. And this lady, you know, and I was saying, it's really nice. She's not a little kid, you know, it's a baby. So she's looking at Radha Govinda, and she looks at her, it was an adorable kid. And then she looks at Radha Govinda, then she turns her head. She couldn't figure out where to go, you know, Radha Govinda, my child, Radha Govinda, my child, you know. And that, I was thinking, that's exactly the situation for most of us, you know, like, start to chant your rounds and zip your mind, gets distracted over here, then Hare Krishna, you know, during Bhagavatam class, and suddenly you're in another planet, and it's not the spiritual one, you know, it just takes a lot of determination to become Krishna conscious.
Okay. Very good, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Alapi Prabhu ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Thank you for coming.